everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Filmon, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me. And I also want to wish everyone a very happy new year. I look at this year as a year to really flourish, and we flourish by truly honoring ourselves, our needs, going into a deeper connection with one's spirit, and to understand that we have the power to create the reality that we live in. So I don't know about you, but I have been doing a lot this year already and making commitments to get involved with programs that really keep expanding my consciousness, expanding the power I have to heal and transform. So I hope you are doing the same and taking the opportunity to know that the connection that we have with this infinite power within is really where we need to place our focus these days. So focus within and get less distracted from without. And let me just jump into our topic today, because we have a really important subject to discuss. We're going to be exploring how to heal your thyroid naturally. And I just want to give you a few statistics before I introduce my guest and really jump into this topic. So here they are. So it is much more common in women to have thyroid issues. Worldwide, 10 times more women than men have a thyroid disorder. 60% of people with a thyroid disorder don't even know they have one. To 20 million Americans have a form of thyroid issues, and 14% of older people have a thyroid issue, and approximately 10% of women will experience mild hypothyroidism during pregnancy. So as you can tell by the statistics, thyroid issues are actually much more prevalent than maybe you even realized. And in fact, in some of the statistics I was looking at, many people, a high percentage of people, don't even know that they have a thyroid problem, and that could be an issue in itself. And we're going to explore all of these things and more with my guest, Dr. Emily Lipinski, who is a doctor of naturopathic medicine, and she also has a thyroid disease. And as Dr. Lipinski struggled for years to get a correct diagnosis and then to control her symptoms, she found that healing the thyroid requires much more than prescription medication. She shares her many insights and recommendations for healing thyroid issues in her new book, Healing Your Thyroid Naturally. And it is my great pleasure to welcome Dr. Emily Lipinski to the show today. So hello and welcome, Emily.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. And what a wonderful introduction. I really just, I have to say, I love what you spoke about connecting within, and especially that's just so important for this year. I feel the same way.
Yes, thanks for acknowledging that. I think we can not only get distracted but distressed with what's going on in this time of change and transformation on the planet. And if we do that, it can really adversely affect our thyroid. So I'm all about protecting my adrenals, protecting my thyroid, and really going where the power is, which is within.
Yeah.
So that navigates us through any choppy seas. And that's the true power that we all have. So so thanks for acknowledging that. Okay, let's jump into thyroid issues. I have a confession to make as well to everyone listening, and that is that I had been, maybe 20 years ago now, diagnosed with Hashimoto's thyroiditis. So we have a lot to talk about, because I have my journey with that issue, which I actually never went on medications, Emily, and I took the bull by the horns and decided I was going to get to the root cause and heal it. So I have. And you know, I'm just always monitoring it, but I've never had to do any medications because I was unraveling the root cause issues, which I like to do. But it made me aware of just how prevalent thyroid is and the problems with thyroid issues and the many complications that can occur if we're not taking care of it properly. So that's what I want us to talk about you know, just so many of these facts that people need to know and be enlightened about. So maybe we should start with your journey, with your thyroid story.
Absolutely. Yeah, so it was about maybe 10 or 12 years ago for me when I first discovered I had thyroid issues as well. But really, when I look back into it, and this is the case for so many women and patients that I speak to, they intuitively knew long before that something was wrong with their thyroid, which I did. But when I went to the doctor, and this was before I went to naturopathic medical school, and I didn't have the knowledge that I have now, so I was seeking the advice from the conventional medical system and trusting that they had all the answers for me. And when I went to the doctors, they said, no, your thyroid's normal, everything's normal. And they had just been testing the TSH hormone, which we'll probably get into touching on later. But that wasn't showing the whole picture. And so finally, when I was in naturopathic medical school and I had a little bit more knowledge at least of what to test, I looked at my antibodies and I looked at my TSH thyroid hormone. And at that time, my TSH hormone, which is the, in North America at least, is the diagnostic test to diagnose hypothyroidism, that had become abnormal, but also my antibodies were sky high. So I did have Hashimoto's hypothyroidism. And I wish my story was the same as you, that I didn't get put on medication, but I did. And I was put on conventional levothyroxine, so the T4 medication, which I was on for about 3 years, and it did nothing for me except make my TSH labs look normal, but I still had all the same symptoms. I hardly lost any weight. I still felt so cold and fatigued despite being on this medication. So at that time, I started looking for more answers on how, and like you mentioned too, how we can look at the root cause and where was the thyroid issue really stemming from. And so that's when I started looking at more into the reasons why the antibodies become elevated. So and I'm not sure where you went with that and where you found your root cause was, but mine was definitely multifactorial. So I had to look at the gut. I had to look at stress and adrenals. And I also had to look at just my overall general lifestyle and what I was eating as well. I don't know kind of where you want me to go from here, but because there's so much, right?
There's so much. Well, first of all, before we go into some of the underlying causes, I always like to start at the very, very beginning, and that is to even first define what the thyroid is and what it does. So let's start there. For people who are listening, we're going to start with baby steps and take us through that journey. But what is the thyroid? What does it do? And the other part of that question, Emily, is what are some of the symptoms and consequences of having an untreated thyroid issue?
So the thyroid gland is located in the neck. And it's a very small butterfly-shaped organ, and it's a hormone. It's an endocrine organ, so it releases hormones. The main hormones it releases is T3 and T4 hormone. And the interesting thing is the thyroid actually secretes more T4 hormone, and the body has to convert it into T3 in the periphery, so outside of where the thyroid gland is. And that might be important depending on where our conversation goes, but these hormones that the thyroid gland releases are essentially important for every single cellular process in the body. So it's important for our heart to function, it's important for our brain to function, it's very important for our metabolism, it helps our internal thermostat, so keeping us nice and warm. So these thyroid hormones are really vital for our life, but also for the quality of life. And when the thyroid gland is not working optimally, we start seeing changes in in essentially the entire body. So and where these thyroid hormones are working. So there's a lot of changes in terms of feeling foggy headed. Brain fog is one big symptom. Having a lower body temperature, always feeling cold, inability to lose weight, but that's kind of the key factor that everyone looks for, but that's not always the case. I've had lots of patients who are very thin but still have hypothyroidism. Feeling very tired and fatigued, and a lot of my patients with hypothyroidism, especially Hashimoto's, have noticed palpitations and something going on, maybe even subclinically with the heart. And then also hair, skin, and nails are often adversely affected, as well as sluggish bowels because the metabolism slows down when we don't have enough thyroid hormones present.
Yes, it covers so many areas. Depression is so much associated with thyroid, which often gets misdiagnosed and mistreated. I always like to say that outer third of the eyebrow often disappears with people who have thyroid. The skin gets really dry. I mean, there's just so many things. Cholesterol can go up. You can have really high cholesterol numbers because your thyroid is sluggish. So it just has huge, it has global ramifications, really. And that's why it's such an important issue. Even people or women, rather, who are dealing with fibroids, for instance, could have a thyroid issue that is behind the creation, development of fibroids, which is pretty important information. However, if you go to your traditional allopathic doctor, they actually don't talk about any of these things. And as you said, he will go and get in your standard blood test your TSH. That's the standard way that in the panels that are done for blood workup is looked at. But there's a problem with that, isn't there, Emily? There's a problem. And I'd like you to talk about it. I see this as two problems. One is the reference range for what is considered normal and what really is a normal range and an optimal range, and also the limitation of just testing for TSH. So why don't you just dive in with that?
Absolutely. Yes, so as you mentioned, this TSH is the standard hormone that's normally checked. And the TSH is released actually from the pineal gland in the brain. So even though it's known as kind of a marker to test thyroid function, it's actually looking at how the brain is reacting to your thyroid gland. And in theory, when the thyroid gland is slowing down and producing less thyroid hormones, this hormone from the brain should increase and almost, as I tell my patients, start kind of screaming at the thyroid gland to kind of kick up the pace and start pumping out more thyroid hormones. Likewise, if the thyroid gland is pumping out too much hormones, it should kind of slow down and pull back and get lower in the body because it doesn't want to stimulate the thyroid gland any further. That said, there's a few issues with this. One is that I've seen a lot of people with something called subclinical hypothyroidism or in the early stages of Hashimoto's when that TSH isn't actually responding like it should. So people have all the symptoms of hypothyroidism, their thyroid gland most likely is under attack by antibodies, but the TSH isn't showing the full picture. But the second issue with the TSH is, as you mentioned, these reference ranges, and they have changed, but if we're looking for TSH in so it's MIU per liter, and normally kind of the classical historical medical thinking was that the TSH should get to above 10 or above for someone to be medicated. We now have in Canada, I'm not sure how it is in Australia where you are right now, but the upper limit now has been changed to, depending on what lab you're at, 4.5 or 5 is the upper limit. But the American Association of Endocrinology has said that that upper limit should actually be closer to 2.5. So I see a lot of women that have a TSH of 3 or 4. They're clearly hypothyroid, but because that TSH value is still so far from what was historically known to be true hypothyroid of TSH at 10, they're not actually getting properly looked at or having further investigations of their thyroid and overall health because the TSH has said, okay, it's not past that upper limit, you're okay, when really it should kind of be closely looked at.
And that is such an important point, and I want to emphasize that. And if anyone wants to go and look at their blood work up and see what your thyroid, your TSH was, what I have been taught is really anything that's above 2 or below, around 2 or 1.5, 2 is really more optimal for a functioning thyroid. If it's over 2 and it's getting into 2.5 or 3 and that blood work up, you really want to check it out and look at whether the thyroid is really impacted. So one of the problems for people is that the reference range is so liberal in its definition that they often, it isn't really acknowledged. I mean, I recently had someone go to a doctor and their blood test came back with a thyroid of 3.4, and the doctor said, you know, there's nothing wrong here. You know, alarm bells went off for me, but for them, everything is fine. And you can't afford to have your thyroid misdiagnosed because, as we said earlier, it impacts so many functions in a woman's, in everyone's body, but I see it like you working with women so much, including fertility, and so many issues. So we need to understand that we want, to know what that reference range really is. So that's the first thing I think we have kind of hit on here. But there's a second piece of this, Emily, and that's when it comes to Hashimoto's thyroiditis. So this, and I'm going to let you take over and explain what it is. I just remember a statistic that I came across, stuck in my mind for whatever reason, and that statistic said that about 80% of people who are diagnosed with a thyroid imbalance actually has an autoimmune Hashimoto's thyroiditis condition that's really driving their thyroid issues. And that's a really important statistic. I don't know if it's still valid. You would probably know better than me, but we can delve into why this is a really important issue to discuss.
Yeah, that statistic, depending on where you're looking, it's somewhere between, so even a little higher now, somewhere between 80 to 90% of people diagnosed with hypothyroidism have the Hashimoto's form. And Hashimoto's is an autoimmune disease. And so what that means is it means that the body is actually attacking the thyroid gland. So it's somehow been triggered to do so. And there's, you know, reasons of why we could get into that later. But the body has started to produce antibodies. The two common antibodies found in Hashimoto's hypothyroidism is this TPO antibody, so thyroid peroxidase antibody, and another antibody called TGAB or thyroglobulin antibody. And what happens is these antibodies, these proteins in the body are attacking the thyroid gland, and that's the reason why the thyroid gland starts to slow down and slowly produce less and less T3 and T4 hormone. The interesting thing about that is normally these antibodies are present for somewhere like up to about 5 years before TSH actually finally changes and starts to increase more drastically. So this is why a lot of women have thyroid symptoms like I had years before my true diagnosis of hypothyroidism, because my antibodies were probably mounting slowly higher and higher and higher, attacking the thyroid gland. My thyroid gland was having trouble producing the T3 and T4 hormones. But my TSH, my brain hadn't really caught up to the fact that this antibody attack was happening. And so you know, fast forward to finally after, you know, 5 years or so when the TSH finally switched. And that's why, you know, you'll probably speak to the fact too that it's so important that if you are having thyroid symptoms to really check out these antibodies, which is done through just a simple blood test. It can be done at the same time the TSH is collected. And then you can take a look and see if you're producing those antibodies that could be slowing down or affecting the thyroid gland.
Yeah, you know, here's the problem. When you go to your doctor and they do a blood panel, they, especially for people who have insurance or Medicare, they will only do the TSH. They never do antibodies.
Right.
So it's never offered, first of all. And therefore, without having the antibodies tested, you're not going to know what truly is driving this thyroid imbalance and then get to the root cause. So this is the first important thing that people need to understand. They need to understand that you've got to test your antibodies, but it's not being offered when you go and you get your basic blood workup, which means you have to either insist on having your antibodies tested when you see your doctor, endocrinologist, whoever, or you have to take some money out of your own pocket and work with a lab. And I think even Life Extension Labs will do that. There are places you can do that online if you need it to actually get a proper and accurate diagnosis of what's really going on. Otherwise, if you don't find the root cause issue, which is a high probability it could be an autoimmune issue, then your thyroid is getting destroyed. You're actually not just making it sluggish, you're damaging it, and that can lead to all sorts of serious problems down the track, and you're never able to really resolve what's going on. So, we need to be able to have an accurate diagnosis so we can take action and really heal it. Otherwise, we're putting a Band-Aid on a problem that's never, ever going to resolve the real issue at hand.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I liken the damage to, I mean, you can actually think about how these antibodies are, you know, attacking the thyroid. Most people with Hashimoto's hypothyroidism, their thyroid actually becomes enlarged. Many people end up going for a thyroid ultrasound just to check out if there's, you know, anything more serious going on. But the thyroid is becoming enlarged partly to do to this, as you mentioned, this constant attack of antibodies against the thyroid, and it's kind of, you know, putting up its armor to say, like, you know, stop attacking me. And most people with Hashimoto's also, not only do they have an enlarged thyroid gland, but they also have usually benign thyroid nodules as well that may also be built up because of this attack on the thyroid gland that can happen, you know, for years.
Right, so, let's talk about what contributes to an autoimmune condition that is affecting the thyroid. I mean, if you have an autoimmune dynamic going on, it could have implications in many areas of your health, which I think is another reason why you really want to do some good diagnostic testing, because if you're not addressing the root cause that's creating this overreaction to your immune system, which then starts attacking your different organs, it can be attacking and obviously impacting the thyroid, but it could be silently impacting and attacking other parts of your body, which is why this is so important to diagnose and then to be able to have a proper treatment plan as well. So what are your thoughts about that, Emily?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, exactly, I really think that is so important, because a lot of people that do have Hashimoto's and that don't do anything to heal the root cause, or have thyroid disease and have no idea if they have Hashimoto's or not and do have Hashimoto's, over the years, they're much more likely to develop other autoimmune diseases. like Addison's or rheumatoid arthritis and so forth. The good news with that is if you do get to the root cause and work at reducing those antibodies, you can reduce your risk factors for developing these other autoimmune diseases. So I think you kind of were wanting to know how does someone develop an autoimmune disease? Is that right?
Well, yeah, I think we need to delve a little deeper now and kind of look behind the curtain because, you know, we're looking at the thyroid and we can obviously see symptoms that are occurring because the thyroid isn't working properly, and we've been talking about why we need to find out what really is affecting the thyroid. And, you know, it's probably time to go even deeper, Emily, and look at some of those root cause issues are behind a hypothyroid response to the thyroid.
Yeah, so I think there's kind of two ways to look at it. I always say, you know, when we're looking at an autoimmune disease, I've had so many patients say, you know, why has this happened to me? Well, first, you know, we want to look at why someone develops an autoimmune disease. We know genetics is part of the picture. There's three reasons kind of off the bat that we want to look at for the development kind of how this perfect storm happens. So we have the genetics. So someone may, you know, some people know that they have a genetic link, but sometimes, you know, with females, because hypothyroidism affects females more, perhaps their mother or sister also had hypothyroidism. But it could also be that someone in their family had other autoimmune disease, like rheumatoid arthritis or lupus. Genetics we can't do anything about. But the second kind of part we want to look at is the triggers for an autoimmune disease. And we know that there's these triggers, most of them we can modify. So these include, you know, things from eating a Western diet, you know, high in refined fats and processed sugars, exposures to heavy metals and different toxins, certain infections like parasites and Epstein-Barr virus and cytomegalovirus have been associated with a trigger, long-term stress, specifically long-term stress, short-term not as much, but you know, stress over time, so affecting the adrenal glands is a trigger. And even using certain medications long-term, things like NSAIDs and the birth control pill has also been shown to be a trigger. And when we're exposed to enough of these triggers over time, and again, this is where it's kind of like how some people are exposed to all these sort of things over a lifetime and develop cancer, and other people may smoke their entire life and never get cancer. Same sort of thing. We don't know why one person needs to be exposed to multiple triggers and the other person doesn't. But over time, exposure to enough of these triggers has a bigger risk factor for the development of autoimmune disease. And then the third part is that for an autoimmune disease to be present, most of the research is saying now that leaky gut or intestinal permeability also has to be present. And I'm sure you've probably spoken to that on your show before, but that's such an important piece of healing the thyroid gland is also looking at the gut and healing the gut, because that is where most of the immune system is, and that's where we really have to make sure we're focused on as well.
Yes, you know, we can talk about the gut because when I discovered that I had Hashimoto's and I began to delve into things, that's when I realized that I really had a compromised gut health issue and probably have leaky gut as well. Because if you have leaky gut, it means that you have these little micro tears and you have undigested food or undigested particles that shouldn't be in your bloodstream escaping out of your gut and now roaming around in your bloodstream, which the immune system sees as foreign invaders, and they try to do their job and attack them, but it gets all confused. The messages get all confused, and what winds up happening is that the immune system starts attacking itself or your own body. So that was a big thing for me to realize as I began to unravel the causes that led to this autoimmune condition that I was dealing with. It starts with the gut, and that's when I realized that I was doing it all wrong when it came to my diet, right? And starting with eliminating gluten for me, and I had to eliminate became gluten free and also lactose intolerant. So I had to start to change the diet and eliminate the foods that were having the greatest impact on creating an inflammatory reaction in my gut. And I'm going to let you talk a little bit more, but I just want to add that there are many things that can cause an inflammatory response occurring and damaging the lining of your gut, which includes, as you said, birth control pills, and includes antibiotics and steroids. So there are toxins in the environment, glyphosate. So there are many things that we are challenged by that actually cause incredible damage to the healthy functioning and particularly the lining of our gut. And I'm just going to let you carry on and take the ball from there.
Yeah. And so a diet that's really good for healing, healing the gut, and I've also, you know, I generally call it the healing thyroid diet. Almost, I tell most of my patients that gluten usually it needs to be the first thing to go. And there's one, first and foremost, is gluten. Most products now that contain gluten contain a lot more gluten than they originally did. I've had the question posed to me, well, you know, our ancestors did so well on gluten. So, you know, so well on wheat and these other things and barley and so forth. And so why would it be important to remove gluten? Isn't that just a fad? But a lot of our wheat and the products on the market have actually been manufactured to contain a lot more gluten than they've ever had before. And gluten is a protein in wheat and other grain products, and it is as it sounds. It's glue. It's gluey-like. So it can really bind things up in the gut and cause inflammation. But specifically for the thyroid, there's also been several studies showing a link between autoimmune disease and gluten intolerance. So this doesn't mean that people with thyroid disease have celiac disease. There is a higher incidence of people who have celiac disease also have hypothyroidism. But even just having a gluten intolerance and your body not really being able to process the gluten well, there seems to be a correlation between thyroid disease sufferers and people that are intolerant to gluten. And we also have studies showing that people who follow just a gluten-free diet for a year had almost a huge drop in thyroid antibodies, just going gluten-free alone. And we also know that the gluten can change the microbial milieu and the microbial health in the gut. So there's a lot of reasons why going gluten-free can really improve not just inflammation in the gut, but may also lower these antibodies and also help the thyroid function better because the antibodies are going down. As you mentioned, lactose can also be inflammatory to the gut, and other foods, you know, Western diet foods, refined sugars, refined oils, kind of that typical classic Western diet that a lot of people are moving away from, but it's still, you know, it's still there. It's still out there. I find one big thing that a lot of people don't think about is the oils. Vegetable oils that is in fast food, but also when you go to a restaurant, even if you're going to a nice restaurant, most of the time, if you ask what your food's being cooked in, it's often being cooked in some sort of vegetable oil. And these vegetable oils are proving to be incredibly inflammatory in the research. Some research is showing that they're much more inflammatory to the body than refined sugar is. So that is also something that you really want to look at, is making sure that you're not just looking at the gluten and the dairy, but the vegetable oils I find is a really big one for lowering inflammation in the gut. Not sure if when you were on your thyroid journey, if you ever looked at the autoimmune paleo diet or removing grains completely or other triggers Did you go down that journey at all?
Well, when I was doing it, paleo wasn't in vogue. It wasn't even known back then. So, but what I did do was I pretty much went on a low-carb diet. And then, of course, trying to do as much organic as possible, and then bringing in some of the animal sources. You know, I actually studied and have great respect for traditional Chinese medicine, and I did a lot of work with acupuncture and with a master Chinese herbalist to help get to the underlying issues and heal all these facets. And one of the things I learned, Emily, from a Chinese medicine perspective, herbal medicine perspective, is that the liver plays a major role with thyroid, because the liver metabolizes the thyroid hormones. And if the liver isn't functioning properly, then you're going to have an issue with the production, proper production of thyroid. So, yeah, I mean, when you start unraveling this mystery, it's all about getting healthy again, isn't it? It's about understanding that this thyroid is telling us, is giving us a message that we really need to put all those pieces together to get really healthy. It's kind of a, in a way, if we're really willing to work with it, a blessing in disguise, because there are things brewing, whether it's a leaky gut, whether it's exposure to toxic chemicals, whether it's a toxic liver, whether it's exhausted adrenal glands, which I had all those things going. I was under a period of a lot of stress. I was eating the wrong foods. You know, it was just a crisis in the making, really. And that issue with my thyroid brought it all to a head and made me realize that there were so many things that were being affected by the stress and, from all the bad choices I was making at that point in my life.
And that's a really interesting point that you bring up, the liver, because it is all connected. And I have such a reverence for traditional Chinese medicine myself, and I use traditional Chinese medicine, and I incorporate some of those principles into, you know, healing your thyroid naturally. And even from, a chakra point of view, in the thyroid gland is associated with your voice. So in certain cultures, they talk about how, well, if you have a problem with the thyroid gland, you might not be using your voice as wisely, or you're not speaking up as much, or you're holding something back. You're not saying how you truly feel. I think that's definitely a factor for some people. But with the liver, and in Chinese medicine, the liver represents detoxification, but it's also the organ associated with anger. And so in Chinese medicine, if you're holding back your anger, you're not moving that anger through, or you have something that you're very angry about, it can affect the liver. And in turn, the liver absolutely affects, there's communication between the liver and the thyroid gland. As you mentioned, it filters the thyroid hormones, but it also filters out all those toxins that we're exposed to on a daily basis. So it's absolutely, all these things are interconnected, and not just in terms of getting healthy, but that stress piece, and then looking even at, the mental emotional factor too of, is there repressed anger? Are you not saying something? I think those are all interesting aspects to look at as well.
And I'm so glad you brought that up, because where I am at these days is the understanding that we have to deal with our emotional wounds and all of the unresolved traumas that we carry. Everyone carries their own version of that. But those unresolved emotional wounds or traumas are having a direct effect on the body's ability to function and to heal. And there's always that component with any condition, with anything that's going on in the physical body, there is an emotional piece that often is preceding it or contributing to it. So the beauty of traditional Chinese medicine, they understand that each organ is associated with an emotion. So you can begin to kind of get clues of what might be going on and how to process and deal with it. You know, we didn't talk about the role of the adrenals and how the adrenals are so primary in affecting many issues in the body, but particularly what we're talking about today is the thyroid and autoimmune diseases or just a hypothyroid condition, which is so interesting because really, you know, what is it? You know, what's true? What's a true hypothyroid condition? There aren't many conditions. There are the contributing factors that actually will result in a truly hypothyroid problem. A thyroid that's not functioning properly is being caused by something, right? Being caused by something. It could be deficiency of nutrition, of minerals, of proteins. Iodine deficiency is associated with the low thyroid. It's always a query in my mind as to why we aren't looking at what that message is giving us, if something isn't working properly so we can address it. Because just prescribing a thyroid hormone isn't going to change the underlying dynamic that's driving that problem. It will probably just mask it if it does anything at all.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about adrenals, because we haven't mentioned that part of the puzzle.
Yeah, so the adrenal glands are two very small, kind of small organs that sit on top of the kidneys. So they're kind of located in your back, and they are needed to respond to stress. And that's so they're kind of your fight or flight organ. And they really shine at responding to short-term stress. And that's what the intention for the adrenal glands, in my mind, really, really is, in all animals. And I kind of like to think about this picture of if there was a bunny in the woods, and a fox was to come and run after the bunny. There's essentially only two outcomes that could happen in this situation. Either the bunny runs for its life and it gets eaten by the fox anyways, or it escapes the fox's, you know, attempt. And what the bunny probably does is it goes back to its field of grass and just starts eating grass again. And we know from animal behavioral studies that animals in the wild that have these bouts of short-term stress, once they're back in a comfortable situation again, within a few minutes to hours, their stress response totally shuts down and goes back to a relaxed state. So that bunny rabbit's not thinking about, like, oh, is that fox around the corner? Is it going to come up? Is it going to come up behind me? It's just kind of focused in the moment of having its meal again. But we know that modern day humans, when we have a stressed response, like let's say, you know, we're driving somewhere and someone tries to cut us off and we almost have an accident, but we escape that. Most of us probably aren't just all of a sudden relaxed again. Maybe we're thinking about that person that tried to cut us off. Maybe we're thinking about a boss. We're thinking about our kids, finances, everything we have to do when we get home, and this constant rumination that goes on in our mind that we know most humans now have is causing constant stress, even though it might not be a real impeding threat, like that initial threat of someone trying to cut us off is gone. We are making our lives more stressful a lot, in part and parcel because of our thoughts and because of our lifestyle. But this constant stress is creating long-term cortisol rise. So if, let's say back to the bunny in the woods, during that short bout when the bunny was trying to escape, cortisol rose in the bunny's body, and once it escaped and went back to greener pastures, the cortisol dropped off, went back to normal levels. But with this modern day human lifestyle we have, we know that instead of that nice drop off of cortisol after a short little bout, we have constant continued low grade or medium grade elevations of cortisol. And cortisol is that stress hormone. Again, wonderful for short-term bouts of stress. It helps us escape things faster. It helps us get work done. It makes us have really great short workouts if we like that. But over time, it can affect other glands in our bodies negatively, especially other endocrine glands or hormone glands and the thyroid gland. So thyroid hormones don't do well under long-term elevations of cortisol.
Right, and they actually can block the thyroid hormones as well, so that can lead to a sluggish thyroid. You know, there are a couple things I want us to just discuss before we bring our conversation to an end, and that's, let's talk about the impact of cell phones and wireless technology and EMS on our thyroid gland.
Yeah, this is such an interesting topic, and I actually don't think it's been spoken about enough. I think, you know, there's things that are coming to light more and more with 5G and some of the other new technology things that are coming to light in our current times. But there's a lot of people that, EMFs in general, so when I'm not sure how much your listeners know about EMS, meaning electromagnetic field. So these electromagnetic fields come from the cell phone. They also come from microwaves. They come from lights. We have EMFs to some degree from the sunlight. But the electromagnetic fields that some of these electronic devices have, specifically I want to talk about the cell phone, they're putting out energy. And that energy, we know, can have negative effects on the body. So some people, right away, I'm sure some of your listeners are saying they know about it, or they actually feel differently when they're around certain EMFs, because there's a lot more people that actually have something called EMF sensitivity than it's being reported. So someone that is sensitive to these electromagnetic fields might feel when they go to a big box store like Costco or the mall, they might feel fatigued. When they're watching TV or at their computer for a long time, they also might feel a little bit unwell or have headaches. Some people with EMS sensitivity have a lot of light sensitivity or difficulty with brain fog after a day or a few hours in the mall. So those are all signs that you actually might be reacting to these EMFs. But the EMF specifically from the cell phone, and what's so interesting about this is, and there's lots of studies on how EMFs may negatively affect your health, but where the cell phone antenna is, it used to be, if you can remember, back in when cell phones first came out, there was an antenna that came out of the top of the cell phone to receive the signals. Now that antenna, and that antenna is where there's a concentration of this energy, this EMF, and now that antenna is actually in close to where you speak. So that antenna is located actually close to the neck. Most people hold their cell phone, obviously, up to their mouth, and so they have a high degree of this energy, which is radiation, coming into around their jaw and neck area. And we have only preliminary studies showing that some of this energy and radiation may negatively affect their thyroid gland. We have other quite cumulative data showing that people that are on their cell phones for long term, that radiation may actually adversely affect the brain. So the other factor with EMS and this energy is they can, not just for people with EMS sensitivity, is it can impede and reduce quality of sleep, feeling, the ability to relax, and the ability to kind of help turn down that adrenal response. So I generally recommend, you know, if people haven't thought about their EMF exposure, you might want to look into that a little bit more. But there's some really simple things that you can do to limit your exposure, like using headphones when you talk on the phone, turning off your Wi-Fi at night, sitting a little bit farther away from the computer or TV, and just starting to be aware of where your electronic devices are in the house, and maybe kind of starting to think about that a little bit, because this can have actually not a big impact on how we relax and reduce our stress, but also reducing the radiation exposure to the thyroid gland.
Yeah, I'm glad we talked about this, because I have been researching the effects of EMFs for 15 years, Emily, and investigated the impact of EMFs on the endocrine system and how it actually is is altering the functioning of everything, our thyroid, our adrenals, impairing our gut microbiome. So we need to understand that this is a toxin that we are exposed to, and it seems to have the ability to exacerbate the impact of all other toxins, so chemicals in the environment, and things we may take in through our food or just exposed to. The EMFs make all of them worse. So absolutely reducing exposure, shutting things down at night, and getting really good technology that is protective to ourselves, which I have been recommending for years and years. I think everyone who is using any device, which is all of us, really need to find an effective technology that's going to protect their bodies. So there's, you know, lots that we need to understand to have this holistic approach that is protecting us and our children and our children-to-be as well, because it's all impacting our reproductive capacities and fertility. So we have about 5 minutes left. So how do we want to wrap this up? So let's talk about what are the key steps that you think people should be doing, you know, conventional Synthroid type of medication or natural thyroid medication, and some of the other key recommendations you have that you've written about in your book, which I want everyone to know is just being released now, right, Emily? It's Healing Your Thyroid Naturally is the title. Healing Your Thyroid Naturally. So while we're talking about that, where do people find out more, and where can they order Healing Your Thyroid Naturally?
So it's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Chapters Indigo for people that are in Canada, and it's on Amazon in Australia as well. And you mentioned, you know, kind of wrapping up and kind of the steps that I kind of go through for natural thyroid healing, I think just kind of where we started, you know, first and foremost, having a complete thyroid panel blood work done is really key. So making sure that you're looking and checking into those thyroid antibodies to see if they're elevated, and even testing your T4 hormone to see how much thyroid hormone that your thyroid gland is putting out. We didn't get into some of the other important supplements or vitamins that are good for the thyroid gland, but certainly vitamin D is really important for the autoimmune response. So I also make sure my patients have that checked. And B12 deficiencies are also more common with people with hypothyroidism. So you can have all that kind of blood work done at once to kind of get a big picture of what's going on with a thyroid gland. Then I usually start with a diet, kind of as you did. Taking out gluten is a huge first step. It's not easy for a lot of people, but it can make a tremendous impact quite quickly to really start healing up, healing the gut and reducing stress on the thyroid gland. Then looking at stress and environmental triggers, including EMS. So looking at household toxins, which we didn't get into too much, but there's a lot of toxins, pesticides, chemicals that are on the food that aren't organic that we have lots of studies showing that some of the pesticides that are used on fruits and vegetables that are commonly sold in the grocery stores are thyroid toxins. So it's not, you know, not everyone can buy everything organic, but there's certainly some foods that you definitely want to buy organic that are more heavily sprayed. And you can find out that on the Dirty Dozen Environmental Working Group online. Has a good synopsis of the most sprayed fruits, vegetables, produce that you should be avoiding and buying organic instead. And then looking at, you know, diving deeper into the gut healing, maybe with supplements, vitamins. There's many different tests that can be done with a functional doctor, a naturopathic doctor, in terms of looking to see if there's any low-grade infections in the gut that could also be triggering an autoimmune response. And then you know, definitely Chinese medicine, like we touched on, Tai Chi, Ayurvedic medicine, looking at some of the other maybe complementary therapies that can be really make a tremendous impact in healing the body and getting to the root cause, and perhaps exploring that a little bit deeper too. That, and normally these things also touch on the mental, emotional, which can be a really big factor in healing as well.
Well, it's a great list, lots of things that people need to start investigating, because the real goal is to heal, not just accept a diagnosis, but to really understand that it's an indication that changes need to be made, that we can restore function again, and to take the action steps, to do whatever it takes, basically, to get healthy. That's my motto, whatever it takes. And you're doing such great work, Emily. If people want to know more about you, first of all, let me give everyone your website, which is emilylipinski.com. And I'm going to spell Lipinski, which is Lipinski.com, emilylipinski.com. Emily, do you do virtual consultations if people wanted to work with you to get some help?
Absolutely, I do. I'm currently on mat leave, but I will be returning in late spring 2021. If someone's interested in booking consultation, you can find a link right on my website, like you listed, on just book appointment. And I do offer just complimentary meet and greets as well, where I can't provide medical information at that time, but just, you know, to see if it would be a good fit to work together.
That's great. So emilylipinski.com, and pick up a copy of her brand new book, Healing Your Thyroid Naturally, and start getting empowered with the knowledge of how to really heal and get your thyroid back on track. So Emily, thanks so much for your work and your passion and putting this book together and sharing such important and wonderful information for all of us to understand this thyroid story.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's been a pleasure. And as always, it's a pleasure to have everyone joining me every week on What Women Must Know. So I hope you will continue to check in and listen to these wonderful conversations. And as I like to say every week, I hope you will be honoring the wisdom of your feminine self. And we will be back again next week with another wonderful conversation. Until then, be well, take care. Bye for now.